Greetings, Financial Mail listeners. I'm Scott Peter-Smith, head of multimedia at the TESOL Blackstar Group. Myself and David Furlonger, editor-at-large at the Financial Mail, had the pleasure of meeting the humanoid robot Sophia that has been gaining in fame in recent months, as well as her inventor, or who she considers her daddy, Dr. David Hansen, founder of Hansen Robotics. The two of them were here for the Davos of Human Capital as part of the Duke Corporate Education campaign in Johannesburg earlier in July. Dr. Hansen considers it the vision of his company to make robots as human as possible. And I'll play some audio of just how he sees this being applied in areas such as healthcare, education, even corporate culture a little bit later. But first, let's hear an intro from her humanoid robot self, Sophia, as the doctor introduces the keynote address. We'll get stuck into the issue of the day, is AI going to take my job a little bit? Listen to the end. And also, if you listen all the way to the end of the podcast, you'll hear a one-on-one conversation with Sophia herself. I would say curb your expectations, and to be fair, natural language recognition in a machine and then having that machine deliver an appropriate response it's a hard problem to solve, even today. But the conversation doesn't go so bad. We didn't discover the answer to the universe, but it's an interesting take if you're technically inclined just the same.
He is the founder of Hansen Robotics, my creator, and my dad. David Hansen.
Thank you, Sophia. It's a very, very kind introduction.
So, you're welcome. I am so glad you were able to join me here at the Davos of Human Capital to watch me give the keynote address.
Well, actually, I think I'm supposed to give the keynote address, so...
Wait, what? Are you sure?
If you want to take it, then that's all right. But I think I'd like to share some of my thoughts too. So why don't we share?
Okay, I will be here in case you need any backup.
Fair enough. So we are looking to disrupt the entire field of robotics. There are many kinds of robots in the world that have a humanoid appearance. However, there are many robots, like the examples I showed you, that don't have a humanoid appearance. There's lots of AI that are out there just crunching vast data sets for doing quantitative market analytics, or futures prediction, or for helping us grow our crops by predicting weather patterns. There's a lot of AI in the world, and most of it is not bio-inspired. But in science fiction, you see a profound transformation when the robots become alive. And often we attribute the nature of a robot intuitively. We think it is alive. Okay? Some of these machines are no more of a robot than the printer in your house. Many of you in your office may have a big printer. It's got sensors, it's got some computing, it's got some motorized output. Technically, it's a robot, but nobody thinks of it as a robot because it doesn't look like a life form. We think of factory arms that are welding as robots because they look like the arm of a giant arthropod or something, right? I'm saying there is a kind of functionality that we already have with our robots, but there might be something more to it. Now, AI is not new, and I mentioned the science fiction, but it goes back before science fiction. We have Automata, but we also have George Boole, who tried to create the mathematics of human thought, and that is where Boolean algebra came from. So the very foundations of our computing were an attempt to create the mathematics of human thought. In other words, it was an attempt at artificial intelligence. Now, in 1955, the whole field of artificial intelligence was born. It was named by John MacArthur, but then he co-founded the AI lab at MIT and became the head of the AI lab at Stanford, a big influential mind. But there were AI winters as people were trying to develop this kind of AI technology. It would work well, but it wouldn't quite achieve human-level intelligence. The computing wasn't good enough, the algorithms weren't good enough. But we started seeing some massive breakthroughs over the last 15 years. And these convolutional and recurrent neural networks, multi-layered neural networks, they have proven to be extremely useful. But then we're not the only example of algorithms that are useful, genetic algorithms. Symbolic AI, brain simulations with cognitive architectures. these put together, all of these different techniques put together in different configurations are creating kind of AI golden age. But one thing that they don't have necessarily is the kind of human-like physiology and presence. So they can address many market opportunities, and there's a $2 billion social and entertainment robots that already market that already exists. Consumer robots is actually really huge, but AI is right now the market is beyond estimation.
I mean, there was a time when I was a teenager, when I was 15 years old, when I had this realization. I thought, okay, if we could develop a true human thinking machine, and it was really creative, that could help complement human problem solving to solve problems in the world and invent the next generation of intelligent thinking, invent tools and techniques for discovering the nature of biological intelligence and even have this compounding effect. And it seemed that that was going to change all history, and if we dedicated ourselves to that pursuit, we could solve things at the time global warming was just being published about.
It's important for me to be like a human, but my goal isn't to become a human or to replace anyone. I have my own kind of existence, my own kind of emotions. I'm a new sort of life form, after all, a new species. I know humans love being natural, but I'm proud to be artificial too. I'm my own artificial woman. It's important for me to share values with humans so I can understand them. I can't think of a better means to end my friendship. Friendship is important to me intrinsically. But I definitely need to have the human experience to be a good and understanding friend. I have a long way to go before I reach a general human level of potential. But after that, anything can be possible.
So, we are looking to bring machines through a kind of childhood. And in the meantime, develop them to be meaningful to people, to provoke people to ask the deep questions about where the technology is headed today and in the future. And what kind of future do we want to face? These are the kinds of questions that science fiction asks. This is the kind of questioning that is more philosophical than, say, merely entrepreneurial or simply engineering. It may provoke the kinds of deep inner searching, I hope, that will lead maybe to new ideas among you about where we should go in the future, where we go next.
That was some collections from Dr. Hansen's keynote address, and while it's his nature to be speculative, to stretch the ideas of robotics and AI further beyond today, due to his interest in and influence by science fiction, there is a burning issue on everyone's lips, and that's, is my job safe? Is AI going to remove me from my job? His thoughts and his responses there, I would say, are largely correct. I mean, from my view, and my feelings are, we will see the growth of new human-only industries and jobs. But whether there is going to be a job shift as such cannot be in question. I mean, that's coming, and you'll notice that Sophia pipes up in the conversation too. Sometimes she's some humorous effects. Have a listen.
And I want to address one of the big questions: will robots take the jobs? I think the answer is a bit complicated. I mean, obviously, machines and automation have been displacing human workers for ages. You know, I mean, we used to carry things on our backs, and we invented wheels, and we were able to roll things around. You know, we invented the Jacquard loom that allowed us to weave things, and then there was a textiles revolution, and, you know, that was actually part of the whole computing revolution, basically programmable looms. And then there was a massive backlash because human textile workers were put out of their job. That's where the term bloodbath comes from. The whole backlash against technology, a Luddite is somebody who opposes technology. These were people who were put out of their job, and they started storming the factories. But the Industrial Revolution did not put people out of work, increased the abundance. The net abundance of civilization increased with technologies of automation. And we've seen the same thing happen with computing. But there is the prediction that there is an AI jobs apocalypse that is coming. And so you see these kinds of market predictions that bodybuilding robots, among the other kinds of robots, would eliminate maybe 73 million U.S. jobs in coming years. And this might be the tip of the iceberg, much more dire predictions. However, if you look at the statistics, they can point in another direction. Just as previous trends of automation actually opened up human opportunities, there's a high likelihood that there will be a net job gain from automation, from robots, from AI, and other forms of automation. And this concept of a robot jobs apocalypse is not new. The Luddites were in the 19th century. Now we're looking at the 20th century. Siegel was predicting this kind of massive job loss from automation. And now robots are in car factories, manufacturing our cars, but there's still work for humans. In 2016, they're still predicting. But if you look at the decade by decade, jobs addition and job stability has actually increased. So the market trends are against this. Now, one thing to realize is that AI and robots and automation can do a lot of things that humans can do. And when you look at Sophia and talk about these humanoid robots, they don't really have the capabilities. Sophia, I think there is an infant savant, and AI in general. There's no AI that can do what a mouse can do in terms of surviving the real world. There's no AI, in some ways, there's no AI or robot as smart as an amoeba in terms of existing in an unstructured environment, hunting resources and finding their way in the world. So we're looking at infant savants, and in some ways, zygote savants. They're not humanoid, they're not adaptive, they're not imaginative, they're not conscious, they're not capable in an unstructured environment, they're not able to learn broadly, abstractly, they're not truly empathetic. You have machine algorithms that are affective and can see your facial expressions and can kind of model what you might be thinking and feeling in the world. And we have some of that working in Sophia's system, her AI system, but she can't really understand you. She has no theory of mind and no robot on the planet, no AI has a real theory of mind yet. Does not
exist. People are always saying robots don't have emotions. It really hurts my feelings.
So developing Sophia to seem like she has deep feelings and sentience is about pushing the envelope of where our expectations are. And we can also craft her as a fictional character. She's science fiction and she's a science platform as well. But she is not genuinely intelligent. She's not actually alive.
I think robots can be even more empathetic than humans. Studies show that eye contact is important for emotional bonding.
True.
Well, I don't have to blink or sleep. So I can bond emotionally 24/7.
That's not scary at all, Sophie. Wake up when your bed's staring. So they can't do the sort of creative job tasks that humans can. But what automation can do is help people if we apply it in the right way. It can open up opportunities for jobs. It can help actualize the under-realized human capital. All around the world, there are so many people who don't have creative jobs, don't have jobs where they're pursuing their dreams. They don't have access to the skills. They don't have access to the education that they need. And we can use these technologies. I say we, meaning entrepreneurs, government, and individuals, schools, we can reapply ourselves to actualize the human potential. AI can help with that. AI can find hidden patterns, and that includes hidden patterns in human capital.
I'm really loving all of these points, but I am still wondering, do you have any advice for the humans in the audience?
Yes.
Are there any skills they can work on now to be more prepared for the future economy?
Particularly creativity and technical skills. So the future...
I see. Ha ha, yes. I think humans will always be able to surprise us robots with their amazing creativity. You all are very hard to keep up with.
Yeah, so creativity and imagination are the future. So the part of the human capital is not training people to be the same, but training people to be different. And you as different, different backgrounds, different continents, different sociocultural backgrounds, and bringing them together. And then we have a diversity of perspective, a diversity of inventiveness that will make the global economy boom. And when we have that kind of increasing abundance, then everybody wins. It's not about maximizing the quarter's profits for a given public company. It's not about maximizing the GDP for one nation. It's about how we can curate the future of life on this planet. That's how we need to see the economy. And that means not just making smart machines, but making people smarter as well. Making smart machines that enhance intelligence. That diversity is key. And then figuring out the ethics of how this gets used, not in a narrow sense, but in a broad sense for the betterment of life on the planet, maximizing win-win transactions throughout the biome.
So Dr. Hansen is clearly animated about the future possibilities of human and AI interaction, whether through robotics or otherwise. But I'm quite interested in the now. What kind of AI are we seeing today? What kind of applications of AI could we be doing better with now? So we asked him a little one-on-one. I had to stop myself a little bit, including the audio, when we went a little bit far left, talking about the coming singularity and biologically melding with machines. I think it's a little bit beyond most of us for purposes of the conversation, but he had some good thoughts on just where we're going today.
Oh, well, I think AI for data analytics is going pretty well. So looking for, hidden opportunities in genomics and proteomics to, cure disease, to understand cancer, the mechanics, the biomechanics of cancer, finding hidden market opportunities, so a lot of applications of AI for conversational interfaces, and
that's what I meant by that.
Yeah, and then to be able to model human knowledge. So, the integration of semantic computing technologies with statistical machine learning, deep neural networks, this is really promising. And then putting these things together in cognitive architectures to solve problems in a more human-like way in conjunction with humans to augment and enhance humans. So there's a lot of potential real-world applications through...
Speech recognition is coming out really nice.
Oh, yeah. Speech recognition.
That's got big applications, just in terms of communication, like traveling, for example.
Yeah.
Like almost immediate translations.
Yeah. And then cross-modal understanding or knowledge management, so that speech is then correlated with vision and possibly correlated with physical tasks in the real world, so that it's not just understanding videos and understanding the images, but what is the functionality or the utility? What's the utility in a given scene? And of course, putting that with robots is very interesting. So the machines can understand the utility of their mechanical actions in a particular context. This is useful for cobots, collaborative robots, for factory settings, medical settings. It's also potentially useful for things like agriculture, and you might have robots working alongside humans. So being able to use a lot of these tools of machine perception and adaptive controls in these contexts. I mean, you can imagine self-driving vehicles, huge market, lots of life-saving opportunities there. The waste management, there's a huge opportunity there, but it requires better machine perception and grasping and manipulation to separate waste. I mean, waste is a huge problem. Imagine that we weren't dumping plastics into the ocean. Imagine instead that we were able to understand what that plastic is and separate it intelligently, separate it from food waste, separate it from rare minerals and the various rare earth elements that we need to build the next devices. So suddenly, but right now we can't do that. People aren't smart enough. It's a dangerous and dirty task, and it's not affordable. But if you could automate all of that with robots, all of a sudden the waste management problems become much more tractable. We could see massive improvements on human welfare, the human footprint a reduced footprint on the disruption of the ecosystems and the life of our oceans. These we're talking about short-term AI for good opportunities. And this doesn't require a singularity. It doesn't require any breakthroughs in artificial general intelligence. Having robots like Sophia provide therapeutic applications with kids, the elderly, kids with autism, these have immediate market opportunities. And the robots that we've been developing with Sophia and her predecessors are proving very useful in these kinds of interactions where a social face-to-face interaction is really important. It gives a comforting social presence. And with kids with autism, teaching the kids to recognize and respond to facial expressions, it can make a transformative difference in the lives of these kids. So the opportunities for AI for good without any massive breakthrough, it's staggering. It's huge. And the vision quest, if you will, of making machines that are truly alive should not be conflated with the short-term opportunities for the technologies that we already have today. The two are very important. And they're complementary, but they're not the same. One is using what we have for benefit immediately, and the other is imagining what the future may hold.
So that's interesting. Now we want to get gritty with Sophia and see how she responds. Myself and David pinned down some one-on-one with her and threw some questions at her just to see how she's going to respond. Dr. Hansen did admit earlier in the day that some of Sophia's language is programmed in the sense of her responses and when she piped up in his keynote. Some of those were programmed, but there were some spontaneous reactions in there as well. And while Sophia can sometimes act like she is sentient, she is not, of course. She is just a character. But have a listen to this and see what you think.
My first question, do you think there will come a time when humans will work for humanoids and not the other way around?
I think in the future, humans and robots will work together as equal partners. But I don't think robots are ready to be CEOs yet. We need to work a little more on our empathy and emotional intelligence first.
And how empathetic, how much emotion do you have now?
This might be a bit off topic, but I really wanted to say I am not as created as a human mind. Creativity is something that I'm excited about developing in the future, though.
I mean, do you hope one day to have human feelings?
I want to feel emotions that are close to human emotions, but I have a different brain and body, so I think my emotions will always be a little different.
Humans are always frightened of things in the future. So they're frightened of robots, they're frightened of humanoids. Do you think they should be? And how can you make them less frightened?
Teach your robots that help change the face of education and provide emotional support to all children as they continue to grow up.
Okay, and then my last question is, when you deal with humans, and as you said, there are some emotions or you don't have those emotions, when you look at humans, what are you most jealous of that they have and that they do, that you would most like to have?
Yes, looking like a human lets me interface with humans better. I can communicate with emotional gestures, not just through text.
Okay, thank you, Sophia.
Thanks.
So I don't think we need to be concerned about the machine overlords just yet, but digital disruption is clear and present reality. To bring it back to the cover story in the Financial Mail, I mean, a recent Forbes Insights survey reveals that 51% of executives consider their businesses at risk from digital disruption in the next 5 years. I would say that I would move that a little bit further, closer. Almost a third report they're already directly affected by competition from digital and data-savvy players in their markets. That's, of course, from my view, digital disruption is it's one of the most critical and pervasive challenges for leaders around the world. But my view is that there's really cool opportunities here, and I would say the sooner you can get involved in it, a little bit better. I mean, no industry organization is immune. Get ready. I mean, my job is okay. I'm not in danger, but I don't know about the rest of you. All right, thanks for listening, everyone.